You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
What a week.
Mitt Romney won by just 8 votes over Rick Santorum.
Let's become the next president of the United States.
The people of Iowa spoke, and so I have decided to stand aside.
You have taken the first step of taking back this country.
I am proud to nominate Richard Cordray to this post. Back in the 80s, Richard was also a 5-time Jeopardy champion. That's why all his answers at his confirmation hearings will be in the form of a question. That's a joke.
Good morning. It is time to kind of...
Keep your day job, Obama.
When you have to say it's a joke, that means your joke has failed. Anyhow, we have our crew with us to talk about not only what's gone on this week, but what's coming in the week ahead. Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal and blogs for our co-producer WNYC's itsafreecountry.org, Fry Today, journalist and blogger at Fry.com, and Ron Christie, Republican political strategist, political contributor for The Takeaway, and our co-producer's political website, itsafreecountry.org. Good morning and happy Friday to all three of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, obviously, we have to look ahead. The first thing to look ahead to is New Hampshire, right? And I got to ask all three of you if you think that Santorum can actually do as well in New Hampshire as he did in Iowa, or if that even matters. Is South Carolina, Ron, the most important thing for Rick Santorum next?
I think it is. I think heading out of Iowa with his 8-point narrow defeat, which I would still call a victory for Rick Santorum, I think he's rising very strongly in the polls. He's now second in New Hampshire, but I think it's obviously going to go for Governor Romney. The question is, can Rick Santorum appeal to a broader base beyond social conservatives, fiscal conservatives, and attract moderates and independents? And that seems to be the question that remains to be seen. So South Carolina will be his high mark, I think.
He may want to be careful about gaffes because he seems to have been making a few of them over the past couple days, right? I mean, what do you guys think, Farai and Jeff? I mean, do you think that he's going to end up being more like a Huckabee?
Well, you know, I just think that he is going to take a bit of a thrashing in New Hampshire, and we can't just skip ahead to South Carolina and to Florida. Florida, of course, is a very mixed bag ideologically, but in New Hampshire, people are very much fiscal conservatives. And I think Santorum has been tacking to the right, as have all of the candidates. Mm-hmm. So he's not unique in that. But his specific tacking to the right is very unappealing to the New Hampshire voters. And I think he may come off as extremist, and that may have an echo effect throughout the rest of the race.
Yeah, well, since we're talking about echo effects, we might as well talk about who's most likely to drop out of the race and become a host on a talk show, right? I mean, one of the first people they're talking about is Michelle Bachmann. Nobody's talked about this with Herman Cain, though.
It's a good question. I think it's because
999.
There's
no channel.
There really is much else he can say, is there?
But Bachmann, do you think she's going to go on to be bigger than Sarah Palin, at least at the talk show?
I wonder about that because in a lot of the debates, it really seemed like Bachmann was kind of running for a Fox chair and not really for president. She was, you know.
Why do you say that?
Because a lot of what she had to say seemed delivered in the form of particularly kind of cultured, you know, or synthesized sound bites that were designed for a particular audience. And, you know, for all that she said that she was going to be able to overcome this perception that she was predominantly about, you know, kind of ranting or going to the edge. The fact is, you know, even the way that she closed her arguments, even the way that she actually exited the campaign was one in which she was playing specifically to her base. And I think that that's kind of where candidates go from a particular, you know, predilection. They go to Fox News after that.
Ranting, playing to her base. She's a conservative woman from Minnesota representing her district. Ranting sounds inherently sexist. I am so tired of the treatment that Michelle Bachmann gets. She is who she is. She was elected by her constituents to do what she wanted to do, and that was limit the size and the scope of government and, frankly, return to the Constitution. I think she did a phenomenal job running. She's not running for a chair in Fox News. She's running to represent her constituents from Minnesota who continue to elect her and put her in a position of leadership because they respect her vision, not for ranting and not for rambling and not for going on Fox News.
So she could be president of Minnesota is what you're saying.
But no, I mean, I think that she could, and she remains a very valuable conservative voice in the Congress, and one and a power to be reckoned with, one which I think will be more powerful than Sarah Palin because she actually stayed in her term, she stayed in her job, and her constituents continue to elect her.
I do think that she was running for president. I don't think she was realistic. My critiques of her are many, including that I certainly believe that the way in which she used religion basically I found it essentially offensive. I'm someone who believes in God, but when you mention God all the time, you basically are putting yourself on a pedestal and saying that everyone else's faith is secondary. So I have many different problems with Michelle Bachmann, and including her rhetoric around religion. But I do think that she seriously thought that she had a shot. I don't think that that was accurate, though.
Well, but religion is going to play a role, it very much so, in the GOP primaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we have two Mormon candidates who are running. That's a new kind of wrinkle in it. But also, I got to wonder if while these candidates are working so hard to get Republican votes by emphasizing their faith, if that's going to backfire on them when they get to the general election.
I think it will. I think, frankly, these folks are now running and tacking too hard to the right. We should be talking about the issues that confront the country, the economy, a strong national defense. But tacking so far and talking about religion and faith all the time is going to turn people off. And to that end, I think it's surprising. You mentioned the two Mormons in the race. You know, the Boston Globe this morning endorsed John Huntsman over Mitt Romney, which I thought was phenomenally interesting heading into the primary next Tuesday. So we'll see if the endorsement of one person over the other, who they both happen to be Mormon, but they focused on the issues rather than their faith.
Globes never liked Romney, though, we should note.
No, they never
have. The Globe and Romney
have fought butted heads forever. Yeah, he's never been a hero in the hometown paper. Well, since we're talking about things that could backfire, I read an interesting blog in which someone said all of the candidates have come out and heavily criticized Obama for making these recess appointments. Cordray and it's mostly Cordray that's causing most of the consternation. But this is the exact same thing that many presidents have done, going all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt. And the point of this opinion was that if they criticize that now, will that hamper them from doing the exact same thing if they get into office?
Can I just say this? This has not been done before. If you look at the Constitution says that both houses cannot adjourn and cannot be in recess until both houses agree. The Senate wanted to adjourn. The House said no. So according to the Constitution, we're not in recess. This is the first time the President of the United States has used his executive authority to say, well, notwithstanding the fact that the Congress isn't in recess, I say that they are. I think it is a overreach. I think, frankly, it shows the weakness of the President's position rather than his strength. Ultimately, this will be deemed unconstitutional. But the fact of the matter is, if it's not deemed unconstitutional in the short term, does he hamper future presidents by this action?
Although I should say, the Constitution in Section 3 of Article 2 says that the president has the power to adjourn both houses if he thinks it proper.
Right. But he didn't do that. He didn't say that I'm adjourning both houses. He said that I believe that the Congress is in recess and therefore I'm using my appointment authority.
Yeah. I would say that if we're talking about firsts, I mean, there have been a lot of firsts in Obama's administration, his first term to date, shall we say. And I think that what we're seeing here is a reaction to an inexplicable and or actually maybe very explicable but abhorrent trend here where the legislature, particularly the House, is essentially blocking settled law, is actually using appointments to prevent law that has been passed by the legislature itself. In this completely, across the board fashion, and that has not happened before either.
Well, it's happened with judgeships on both sides of the aisle.
He's talking about a bill that's been passed that they don't want to implement, a bill that is law. Right? You were going to say something?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, when you talk about in session, there has been a lot of kind of pro forma time where technically we're in session, but we're not really doing anything. That's one part of the issue. The second part of the issue is that it's not really we're talking here about the head of this consumer protection agency. The opposition is not so much to the nominee or to the appointee at this point.
It's to the
agency itself. What do we need more desperately than consumer protection? I mean, with the levels of fraud and manipulation that go on against American consumers every day, I would think that in the heartland, the Republican heartland that people need consumer protection too. I think we need to debunk this.
I think perhaps the president is banking on this anger with Congress to kind of back him up in this argument. And in that particular point of it, he may be correct. Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal, blogs for itsafreecountry.org, Fry Today, Shadea, journalist and blogger at fry.com, and Ron Christie, Republican political strategist, also blogs for itsafreecountry.org. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Happy Friday.
You too.
Happy
New Year.
And you're talking about the possibility of a woman in the White House, continuing our discussion of Michelle Bachmann withdrawing from the White House race. Super Tuesday called to say there will not be enough women who are qualified to be president until we have more female senators and other women in leadership positions. They need to hold these jobs to get the leadership training to be the executive in chief. Kristen from New Jersey reacted to what I said yesterday on the program. I laughed to myself when, in the course of discussing the cultural obstacles for women in higher office, John Hockenberry referred to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher as Maggie. Really, John? When you talk about Churchill, do you refer to him as Winnie? Actually, I sometimes do, you know.
But you don't.
I take your point. 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to our site, takeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headley. This is The Takeaway. Thanks.